This is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to Shell Shock.
Welcome to the Shell Shocked Podcast, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles podcast. This is episode 7, and in this episode, we're just spitballing about a lot of things. Coming off of the Ciro and Yelly episode, we thought it might be a good idea just to shoot the shit, and so shit was shot, Call of Duty style. Anyway, I hope you enjoy.
Sure, let's all sit there. Hey, we have got an opportunity to talk to a whole bunch of people across the great of North America. This is awesome. How are you guys doing?
I'm all right.
Nearly hacked a lung up, but good otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm painting my nails.
So, painting your nails. Andrew, what are you doing?
Not. I just ran in the door before you called me on Skype.
Ran into a door before? That's good.
I recorded the podcast review of the first episode of Kamen Rider Gaim today.
I don't even know what that is. That's impressive.
Say the same thing.
You guys don't know Japanese superheroes?
I live under a river.
They're masked riders. They've been around since 1971.
Oh, holy shit. They're older than me.
And then Super Sentai since 1975, and that became Power Rangers in 93.
Okay, Super Sentai I'm vaguely familiar with.
And the fact that Nickelodeon is extremely tight-lipped.
Really?
Oh God, it's insane. We weren't even technically allowed to interview anybody at IDW.
Yeah, but you did anyway.
But we did. So and we interviewed some of the writers for Nickelodeon's show anyway. Because I mean, you just asked them directly, and I even got we did some of the voice cast post Nickelodeon started, but then Sean Astin was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it, and then his publicist said no, he couldn't. So once the brass gets in there,
it's Nickelodeon's it. Just.
I get it. No, they're pretty tight with everything. And good God, the movie, it's tighter than I've. Oh man, it's insane.
Yeah, I bet.
But then there's the whole conflict between whether or not the movie Paramount even communicates with Nickelodeon, which they don't.
It's very interesting. Sometimes I wonder, maybe you should have held onto that franchise a little longer.
What, wait for Peter?
Just find someone else. Nickelodeon is terrible.
But it's neither Nickelodeon nor Paramount. It's Viacom.
Oh, right. Viacom's even worse. But Nickelodeon's a terrible place to put any show on because they can't schedule a show worth of crap. They'll give you you got to have 20 episodes, and they'll put them 10 episodes at the end of the year, 10 episodes at the end of the year, and have a big gap where they won't tell you when it comes back on.
Okay, I'll agree. I don't get that. But I never paid attention before. I was like... I didn't know.
I've noticed since Saban moved when they got Power Rangers back, they moved it to Nickelodeon.
Well, I know their Nickelodeon's kind of quasi dicking over Legend of Korra right now. They've changed the time slot and.
But that show, it's kind of like, I think they made their own mistakes just doing the show. I liked Avatar, but Legend of Korra's been kind of rough.
I've got an idea. Let's record a podcast reflecting on the state of the turtle fandom.
Oh, there's sweet topic. Jesus, no. I don't have anything good to say.
I know.
I know nothing about it, so you guys can educate me.
I think it's an remarkably interesting state of being.
I'm a brightly optimistic youth. Tell me how amazing this fandom is.
Well, I kind of have some things to say about the some of the newer news about the movie. Like we got what's her name?
Megan Fox.
I'm blanking. Whoopi Goldberg. Okay, Whoopi Goldberg cast as Bernadette Thompson.
That's kind of old news now.
Blows my
mind.
That's
old news. Yeah.
That was news. Yeah, it was 3 months
ago.
4 months ago.
Whoopi.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm pretty sure we already have kind of glancingly talked about it.
Yeah, we did. Didn't we do Didn't we do a podcast about what we thought about the movie?
I watched Star Trek: The Next Generation. I've done my time with Whoopi. I'm supposed to be free on the contract.
Hey, I like Whoopi Goldberg. Her old stand-up is good stuff.
I'm just easing.
I totally have, like, no problem with whatever they do. I really don't. Like, I'm like, you know what, you're just going to do whatever you're going to do, you know, and there's absolutely nothing that I can do to change that. It doesn't matter if I vote or don't vote with my dollars, you know, it doesn't matter.
I'm rooting for a Street Fighter or a Super Mario Brothers movie result, where it's kind of bad, but you enjoy it because it's just so cheesy.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, here's the thing, is that, like, it's stylistically not going to jive with everybody, and there's nothing you can do about that. But I think that's the big thing about this fandom right now, is it's like, it's gotten to the point where people's personal opinions on whether or not they like things are starting to cripple a fandom by, like, everybody hating each other for what they do or they don't like. Basically, it's becoming too American. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh,
snap.
You're American, you know, too. You're on this continent.
No, at the risk of invoking Snacky's Law, the problem we have with turtles is Snacky's Law, for you guys who aren't aware of it, is that at any point in an argument, someone will compare the other side to those bitchy girls in high school. That's Snacky's Law.
Is that law for Hitler?
Huh? No, that's Godwin's Law.
I'm confused. Go on with your point.
There's Murphy's Law, and there's Chrysler's Law.
Godwin's Law, and then there's, I can't remember the important one. Anyway, it's just everybody.
All I heard was Andrew say Christ, and that was it.
Chrysler's Law. I made it up on the forum because it seemed like every single debate and every thread on the board, eventually, like, come page 12 or 13 or 50 or whatever, like, someone finally comes in there and goes, look, you guys, it doesn't matter because we're talking about four turtles living in a sewer. And it's like, this keeps coming up over and over again, like, as a way to, like, diffuse the argument or have a way out.
Completely fanboy dismissive.
Dude, like, I go on YouTube, I even see the black nerd guy do it. He's like, we're talking about a bunch of talking turtles. We're talking about four turtles living in a sewer trained by a rat.
Now, every time I see that happen, I go, oh, Chrysler's Law, and I put a link to the Urban Dictionary definition of it. And they go, oh, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I may be in a rare position, but I haven't really found that much turtles that I don't like. I mean, to me, they each have their own different appeal.
But no, you know what? Truth be told, there is an interesting discussion there about – not just about this kind of – I think it's a bigger, broader discussion than just a just whether or not people are negative about these things that they like or they don't like. It's like a point where it's become people resent anything that is happening positive in the fandom. And I've got a bizarrely unique scenario because I am creating a commercial thing that is for the consumption of fans. And it's like, so my bias is that I want you all to want to watch it.
Yeah.
and I'm like, every time I come across, like, oh, I just found this thing that I know based on all of your forum posts that you really fucking want to see. But as soon as I say, hey, by the way, we're going to show this to you, you're like, you know what? Fuck you for teasing me, and you should stop doing that. We don't want to buy that. We want to download it. And it's like,
fuck you. Right.
Ungrateful assholes.
Ooh.
Oh, you're a prick.
Did I get all the fan bases, or did I miss anything important? Should I have the action figure company too and the Dreamwave comics?
Oh man, I fucking loved that Dreamwave comic. That was awesome. I was really sad when they stopped making it.
We can discuss each and every single individual fan base and then why they don't gel together. What's the gap? Well, why are they separate?
Here's the gap, and I kind of. It's I want to blame a large portion of it on the ladies, because I find I have the biggest problem with fangirls online rather than fanboys.
I actually agree with you.
Fan fiction.
And no, and I fucking love fan fiction, and I will go to the mat to defend Turtlecest even though I don't read it, because I am we're not going to police other people's triggers, or like, what trips your trigger? We're not going to police it.
You're so crazy.
I do not
agree
with your Turtlecest, but I will die defending your right to make it.
That's right. No, what gets me is that it's a girl thing. We're so We're so socialized that we have no physical might, so we have to be as bitchy as humanly possible. I mean, on the Green Lantern board, yeah, you know what? I've gotten on more occasions, maybe I should go back into the kitchen, or, you know, maybe, you know, any other whatever misogynistic bullshit. But jeez. I have never seen as crazy wackdo shit on the Green Lantern board as I've seen on the Turtle board, or as I've seen on the Avatar board. You want to see crazy? Go to fucking the Avatar, the Last Airbender fandom. Those people are still sending death threats over shipping wars for a cartoon that's been off the air almost a decade.
It's amazing. Now, would you say that then there is a sub-point to this whole, like, debate on females in comic fandom in general is made more volatile by this whole, like, their presence online and what you just said? It's like, do you see a correlation there?
To a certain degree. I mean, women are as defensive about each other as men are defensive against women. I mean, I know a lot of guys who view conventions as male safe spaces, and I don't want to have to be politically correct. If you can't handle this bullshit, then that's your problem. Whereas the internet and zines are really the only place female fans have had to go, because for a long time we weren't welcome at comic book stores and we weren't welcome at conventions. And in certain places we're still not. I mean, it's not to mention the fact that you've got, like, old school people. I've got friends who, like, were involved in the black market X-Files VHS swapping rings from when that show was on the air, and that was the only way you could see certain episodes. And certainly a couple of them, you know, that aired in Canada that didn't air here, or, you know, whatever. And so you've got, like, these old school kind of fans, and then you've got all these new kids with new media who don't understand that there are actually people on the other side of their screens. And I think that doesn't help. And then, of course, you look at especially a lot of fandoms, and a lot of this stuff is skewed for children. And so, you know, you go in and you're expecting to have an intellectual conversation, or excuse me, not an intellectual conversation, an adult respectful conversation with someone who has the emotional maturity of a 15-year-old because they're 15. Not that I'm talking smack on 15-year-olds.
But you don't have
older than that myself.
There's a maturity factor there, no matter what. And
the internet makes everyone more immature.
Well, yeah, and it's a bigger social problem, because not only does it provide safe havens for anonymity, which is goes across the board with people like us who grew up, some of us who grew up without the internet. But I mean, what's even, you can take this into texting, you can take this into anywhere, because every 15-year-old is going to experiment with being an asshole at some point in their developmental stages, which is part of that. But then, so take, for instance, you take a young kid who's like, you know what, I'm going to try being an asshole. And they walk up to somebody in the schoolyard and go, you're fat. They start to cry. They feel an emotional response. There's the development of empathy. If you go, I feel like I'm going to be an asshole, text somebody, you're fat, and you go, that felt pretty cool, and that's it. They walk away. What have you created? You have removed empathy from the developmental stage of that child's development. So not only are you walking into online forums with youth who are 15, but you're walking into online forums with youth and above 15 and around that age, who actually skipped over a stage of developing empathy in their growth. So it's like they don't actually have the ability to recognize that they are hurting somebody at all.
Yeah.
Right? That's dangerous, right? You're actually creating an entire generation of, sociopaths.
Like, hey, you know what else needs to be addressed too, is some people, they go online and, like, you never know what people might have. I have something called Charge Syndrome. It's this sort of genetic thing I have. It did stump my developmental process as I grew up.
Charge.
And I needed a lot of, you know, I'm still getting a lot of help for it. And It's like, yeah, you just never know what people might have. And, like, one person, I forget who this person is, one of our fellow fans posts stuff about, like, someone has, I know someone who has Asperger's and, like, you know, just all these different health, mental health problems. And, like, hey, you never know what someone might have. And then you go, screw you, you got issues, you know.
Jeff.
And what? Yeah.
What did that one dude have that kept taking shits on your floor? Who was that? What do you have?
Oh, so who the fuck that guy? I was, but I
what do you have?
I don't know what the fuck. Yeah, he must have been. He might have been brain dead for all I knew.
Oh, well, that's problematic at best.
I mean, but Jeff, you raise an interesting point that is self-relevant, and I think that's, you know, I think that's good for you, and that's inspiring because it's like, yeah, you're talking from experience. And, you know, with a spectrum disorder that many people have, right? I mean, it's arguable that many of the brightest minds in our generation or in our recent years are probably Asperger's people. And it's just a spectrum disorder. But, I mean, disorder aside, it's still a person. You're still a person. And everybody should respect you regardless of what you may or may not have in your background, and that's, you know, but you raise a very important point, because across the board, people are going on these forums talking about other people as if they're not people, you know, and I think that then when you relate it to something that people are going to get passionate about, like a fandom, it's a majorly nasty thing. Now, the interesting thing is, of course, as soon as these medias hit, you know, come out, people, I don't know, I have seen less violent discussion. Maybe I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm not frequenting the right threads on there, but I've seen less violent discussion about the cartoon, as it's already just on there and people are accepting it at that face value, than they are violently discussing the movie because it hasn't happened yet. And I guess there's something to be discussed there. I mean, am I wrong? Are people going on the cartoon threads and screaming and yelling because Ciro got some reference wrong or something?
I haven't seen it, but I have such a limited tolerance for fandom negativity. Like, yeah, there's a great little YouTube clip of a little, you know, person singing a song that it's okay to not like things. It's okay, but don't be a dick about it. And I have no patience for fandom just straight up hate. I mean, and there's a big line between, you know what, I don't think this was handled well, and, oh my God, this is bad. Like if I were going to talk to Ciro, I would ask, you know, we have April, we have Karai, we have Miwa, who, I mean, is Karai.
Sorry, spoilers.
We have Tang Shen, who is dead. And then we have what, the leader of the Krang, and we have that one teacher robot thing. And those are the only female characters we've seen in the new show. I don't think the show is misogynistic.
Yeah.
But it is problematic that there aren't more female characters being used here. Like, I want to know where the hell April's aunt was this entire time and why we didn't see her even in, like, silhouette, you know? Little tiny things like that, and I can see having that conversation, but I don't think a lot of people who are opinionated want to have a nuanced conversation. They just kind of want to shout.
That's a pretty good question.
It is. It is, absolutely, and it's a great question for not only this show. That's the thing. It's a great broad question that is very, very, and it's actually, like you say, nuanced, fascinating conversations. That do you guys listen to podcasts by chance? Just like in general, do you like pull up?
I listen to a cast or two.
Right. I mean, here's the thing: is I am obsessively talking about fandoms. I love. I pull up here in Canada. I don't know if you're aware of it. There's this thing. It's kind of like was it National Public Radio in the States?
Oh, yeah,
NPR.
Yeah.
So there's the CBC is kind of like the Canadian Broadcast Commission, which is the whole country gets this free news and news on TV and radio. And anyway, there's specific programs on there, and they tend to lean to nuanced, interesting conversations about absolutely everything. And, you know, like whether it's pop culture or just writers or artists or musicians, this kind of conversation that you're going down, that's the kind of shit I love listening to, because it's like – it's fascinating because you could take an entire in-depth look at why females don't appear in the Turtle fandom in a certain, you know, and it's instantly appealing across a mass spectrum of people, what? Right?
Did you guys see this thing? I know this isn't turtle related, and it involves the new Pixar, the new Disney movie Frozen. But they've got a quote from one of the people working on Frozen saying that animating digitally women's faces is that's harder to do because we have such a wider range of expressions than men do. And so that's why all of Pixar's female characters look exactly the same these days, is because it's harder to animate women.
Well, it's not only – I mean, there's an interesting jump-off point there because there's multiple things you can go down. Because I think it's a scapegoat for them to say it's harder, because it's harder maybe for what the reasons that they're suggesting. But it's also top-down. They are getting told to animate those female characters to look a certain way, large eyes, large pupils, certain shapes of face, certain size of chin, certain size of mouth, so that the human brain sees them as cute. You know, and that's it. You want large. It's like, you know, any animal with large eyes. You know, there you go.
The word you're looking for is neoteny.
Yeah, there you go. Right, and then you know you can take that argument and spread it right. Yeah, that same observation, or you know, take it and go across genders. For instance, in my job, you know, as a cinematographer, first and foremost, that's my actual job, not just a documentary filmmaker. But as a cinematographer, my job is to light people's faces or things, right, and.
I honestly had no idea that that's what a cinematographer did. Thank you. Continue.
Lighting.
I'm sorry.
Lighting. Okay. So light, like everything, basically.
He's a gaffer. He's a gaffer.
I'm not a gaffer. I hate working as a gaffer. It's really hard. Gaffer, if you want to, well, gaffer is the person who is putting lights up.
Yeah,
so they have to run all the power. Yeah. They have to, you know what it is. Yeah. Andrew, you're a filmmaker. I'm saying it for the public, Andrew. Stop taking offense. So my job is to paint with light. That's all I'm doing. I'm painting a picture with light. But if I go and paint that picture, I have to be extremely, what's the word? I mean, you know, it's kind of like a rude, kind of in-your-face, vulgar kind of job that, you know, if you're a dark-skinned person, I have to light you differently. If I'm going to put Danny Glover beside Mel Gibson, it's going to be a pain in the ass to light that scene. Because in all of those Lethal Weapon movies, he's dark. He's absorbing all the light. You need to throw way more light at Danny Glover to have him show up on film. And then all of a sudden, he has a pasty white guy standing beside him, and it's really hard. It's why I love shooting stuff with people from the Middle East, because their skin tones are amazing. Because they're right in the middle. They're not white, they're not black, they're just amazing.
What I love about the fact that of what you just said is that because I know you're Canadian, for some reason, what you just said did not trip my hair white liberal guilt trigger. So,
yeah,
like, oh God, that sounds so racist. No, he's Canadian.
He's Canadian, that's fine.
Wait. But I'm interested. You piqued my interest because if I'm talking about race in that regard, that sounds possibly racist to you?
Yeah, because I carry quite a large amount of white liberal guilt.
Sure. Okay. You carry white liberal guilt, but then why is it that, okay, I've got a good friend who's I've never met him in person. He's a fandom friend. He's a turtle fan. He sometimes frequences the threads, but not really. An African American who lives in Kansas, I think. So he says to me on the phone one day, I'm chatting with him, and I give him my address, and he says, "You're okay with a black guy knowing your address?" And I said, "What? Like that? What? That is my jaw hit the floor." And from a Canadian perspective, America seems unbelievably racist because it is black and white. There is a neighborhood over here that's black. There's a neighborhood over here that's white. That doesn't exist here. So I'm like, of course I don't care if you know my address. It seems ridiculous. It's redundant. So just to talk about it in the case of lighting a black person is different than lighting a white person. That's not racism. That's fact.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
No, it's true.
But then in America, you'd be like, I'd be more inclined to run up against somebody literally saying, "We're not going there because black people are there." And it's like, and so what's racism? Saying you're not going to, you know, or talking about the fact that, hey, we have evolutionary differences in our skin pigmentation. You know, I'm male, you're female. That's not sexist. You know what I mean?
I know this is going to sound kind of horrible, but you mentioned the whole thing is because he's Canadian. It's fine. Just reminds me that one of my friends apparently told me that somewhere, I don't know where, somewhere the word Canadian is actually slang for the N-word.
I wouldn't know. I don't think so.
No, I actually
spent looking up that stuff on the internet.
Where did you hear that saying somebody was Canadian was like a derogatory term?
Oh, well, me and my friends were just at a Skype call, and they just got bored, and so I said, hey, let's look up what offensive words are. And then they just found it in a list.
Really? To call somebody Canadian was an offensive word?
So every time I ever mention Canadian in that group or about Canada, they just take offense at it.
That's hilarious, actually. That's quite awesome. I mean, no, we can do a whole freaking podcast on that. But about the inferiority complex of being Canadian, especially in this media
Aww.
Industry.
I'm part French Canadian.
Well, there you go. Now you're getting. I'm married to a French Canadian. But no, there's a whole host of things there. But it's also to do with the fact that it's a really freaking huge place with like the population of California. So it's not very big with the amount of people, but anyway, but going back to this whole like racism versus non-racism, there's a turtle related quote here. I think I probably already said it, but, when we were doing the James Avery interview, he got chatting about, oh, you guys are Canadian, as everybody says, and we make some joke about how nice we are. And then he said, him and his wife were up in Vancouver, and he says, this is exactly what he says. He goes, you know, we decided let's stop a brother on the street and let's ask him where the black people live. So they stop this guy on the street and they're like, you know, where do the black people live? Let's go see them. And this guy they stop on the street is like, what are you talking about? And he's like, oh, right. This is Canada. There is no neighborhood that is the black neighborhood in this city. You know, whereas we have ended up in L.A. and ended up in neighborhoods where we were the only white people there. Everybody was going, what are you doing there? It's like, I don't know. This seems stupid. Why would there be a separate?
It's not so much an issue. It's not even as much an issue of now as much of an issue as back in the day, people just moved out of neighborhoods that had things they didn't like. So that's how you got those separated neighborhoods in the first place.
Well, when it comes to segregated neighborhoods like that, it's not even just, I mean, some of them formed willingly, some of them were forcibly formed, some of them are, it's not just a racial line, but an economic class line. I mean, I got on a bus, I'm born and raised in New England, and I got on a bus, and I always sit – I have a seat on the bus that I always sit on because that's how I roll. And I walk to the back of the bus to where
that
I'm normally going to
sit.
Huh? No. The seat I sit in is always in the back of the bus because I know I'm going to be on the bus the longest. And I really don't like people like pushing past me and stuff. So I'm going to go where I'm going to be out of the way. And this older black man looks up at me and he says, what a world we live in today. And I said, excuse me? Now, mind you, in Boston, you don't talk to strangers on public transportation. It's weird. And this gentleman was a little weird. And I said, I don't understand. And he says that we live in a world where you as a white woman feel confident to sit in the back of the bus with me, a black man. And instantly I felt hugely guilty for no reason whatsoever.
Well, I should retract some of my implication that I am suggesting that the entirety of Canada is void of racism. That's entirely not true. I mean, there are like, you know, neighborhoods, you know, on the East Coast where they're still segregated neighborhoods for exactly the reasons you just brought up, where it's like they were that way back in the day via either willingly or forcefully in some cases, and that's what you end up with. But then, you know, what you're talking about, this kind of like white guilt thing, yeah, it's like how do you let that go? Because that being part of your conversation internally is perpetuating a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it shouldn't be even part of the conversation. It should just be like, you know, other than the debate as to how much light I have to throw at you because you're darker than I am.
But I mean, saying that it's, there's just so much baggage around it that,
yes,
that it's hard to even get to it. Even, I mean, I was raised that you didn't bring up people's race, that it was rude, and it wasn't until I was halfway through college before I even understood how messed up that was.
Exactly.
And how how right? dismissive it is to completely just be like, well, I don't, to be colorblind in America is just, it's foolish and it's folly, but it takes, that's a really hard lesson to learn. And it takes a lot of soul searching to deal with it.
Yeah, no doubt, because there's a lot, because there is history. There's nothing you can do about that. And I mean, up here, it's a little bit, more tucked away, because our equivalent example is a little bit more recent, because of the fact that certain areas of the country were still populated solely by Native Canadians or Native Americans in the North until the Cold War. And the Cold War, we came up there and raped and pillaged much the same that our ancestors did before. But
the
that's
Cold
only
War? That long ago?
Like, I'm saying that's recent, like not that long
Jeez, ago. I know, that's what I'm saying.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, like that, those atrocities are only right there, but we don't think or talk about them. So when you want to say a derogatory word, like the name Eskimo is like calling a black person a nerd. That's the same thing. You don't call an Inuit that word, right? And that, I mean, I've done, you know, I've taught up there in certain schools and stuff, and it's a tough, the same thing, because you have that guilt. You're the white man there showing up and teaching at these schools because you feel guilty of what your recent ancestors, your living ancestors have done.
Yeah.
Right?
I remember a skit once. Do you remember Christopher Titus? He had a show on Fox a while back.
Oh, yeah, I remember Titus.
Yeah. He did a bit on Comedy Central once. He did a...
When I was at Comic-Con this year, I was walking through Artist Alley, and I happened to see this guy who had this amazing picture of Neil Gaiman's Sandman's death. But she was a traditional Japanese woman. And so I just started talking to him, and I asked him. Now, every time I go to a convention, I go to Mike Dooney's table, and I get his con poster, and I have people sign it like a yearbook. And I handed that to him, and he goes, oh, no way. He goes, I was Ciro's college roommate.
Wow.
And I couldn't for the life of me, of course, I can't remember the dude's name now. And I was going to go tearing through my stuff to find this picture of death that I bought from him, because it really was really cool. But yeah, we started just talking about Ciro behind his back and about how, you know, his comic books were everywhere and how he was really into it. And
oh, so. Speaking of Stan Lee, he is going to be at New York Comic Con.
Oh, is he?
To no one's surprise.
God, yeah. I hope he's having something around the same time the Avatar panel is, because I really want to go to that, but I don't want to have to wait in a huge line.
Poor Stan Lee.
Oh, hey, I never told you the rest of that Christopher Titus story. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, there was this whole bit where he was trying to apologize for all the wrongs that the white man's done to like different minorities. So he keeps saying, "I'm whitey and I apologize."
That's funny.
Yeah.
Alrighty, well, that was episode 7. I hope you enjoyed it. My name's Josh. Check us out next time when we find out that Andrew actually loves the old Turtles, seasons 4-6, and Michelangelo's grappling hook and all the pizza. Have you ever accidentally pocket dialed somebody and then talked about them for an hour? I've done
Shit.
That. Okay, somebody's taking a shower while on Skype. This is really weird.
It sounds like someone's fluffing a bag.
Oh, that's what I wanted to know.
Thing. Yeah, someone's opening a package.
Who's doing that? This is not. It's no worse than the one that the bizarre conversation I had with Andrew last time we did a podcast, because then his roommate walked in and said, "Do you spank that kid?"
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
that was amazing. That was the most awkward scenario I think I've ever been in.
So we are literally circle jerky now?
What's Siri?
Is Siri a man or a woman?
I don't know. In my phone, she's a woman.
I think they said I saw something on like IO9 or something about how, of course, I say that I'm name dropping a website and I'm not even sure if that's true, that they may have found the voice of Siri and that she had no idea she was Siri.
No.
That they went through and basically just had her read a list of random words and then the computer reshuffles them.
That's amazing.
What if Siri was Siri?
Standard, probably Lou Ferrigno.
Yes.
Lou Ferrigno at every convention.